Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrars Podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions related to the management systems certification industry. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjr.com/webinar or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Good morning, everyone. I'd like to welcome you all to the statutory and regulatory requirements, anticipating expectations within a quality management system, ISO 9001 audit. My name is Joseph Krolikowski. I am the QMS program manager for Perry Johnson Registrars. So let's begin with kind of the textbook, if you will, definitions for statutory and regulatory requirements. Now, these are taken from the ISO 9000. This is the fundamentals and vocabulary document. And therein, statutory requirement is defined as an obligatory requirement specified by a legislative body. Now, regulatory requirement, the definition is very similar. This is, again, an obligatory requirement, but in this case, it is specified by an authority mandated by a legislative body. So they're similar, but the nuance is the specification of an authority. Now, the main difference, as we've alluded to, between statutory and regulatory requirements is where the requirements come from. Statutory requirements, as the name would imply, come from statutes. These are legal requirements. These are going to come from state and federal governments, Congress. Now, regulatory requirements, again, as the name would imply, these come from regulations. These are going to be things like EPA requirements, OSHA regulations, FDA, FAA, and so forth. Now, regulations typically are going to be rules that are issued by an agency to which the government has given some authority to either regulate an industry or do something else. And these are often going to be found in the Code of Federal Regulations, CFR. Now, here's an example. The FDA is statutorily authorized to regulate food and drug safety through the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Safety Act. However, if you want to get into the granular level, specific labeling, specific packaging requirements, these are going to come from Title 21 of the CFR. These are regulations that are then issued by the FDA in order to help them fulfill their statutory authority to regulate. So understand that a statute is going to be a law, and in most cases, it's going to be very general. Regulations are going to be the rules that are then developed interpreting the law and ensuring that interested parties stay within that law. And obviously, they're going to be much more specific. So, for example, a statute might say that excessive levels of certain pollutants are not to be permitted in or near major bodies of water. Now, the EPA will issue regulations that determine, okay, what is excessive? What is a major body of water? And beyond that, what is the plan for enforcement? How do we ensure that that this idea that was initially stated in the statute, that this is actually enforced? So to bring it back to ISO 9001 and why PJR is auditing these sorts of items. Well, like anything else, PJR is interested in these items because we are compelled to be interested in these items. We're held accountable to a number of requirements as a certification body. Probably none more important than the requirements found in ISO 17021 from the year 2015. Now, that standard includes a clause that reads as follows. Auditing shall include the client's management system ability and performance regarding the meeting of applicable statutory and regulatory requirements. So it's written right into the standard that we are then held accountable to. So then by way of extension, you may wonder, well, okay, where does ISO 9001 itself address these requirements? Well, you may be interested to find out there's actually six distinct places in the auditable portion of the standard, that means sections 4 through 10, where statutory and regulatory requirements are explicitly mentioned. We actually begin with 5.1.2. 5.1, you may remember, you can think of this as kind of the leadership clause, the management clause, and there's a very general statement there that says that the top management of an organization is responsible for ensuring that statutory and regulatory requirements are determined, understood, and consistently met. From there, we go to section 822. Now, 822 is the, you can think of this as kind of the order entry clause, the contracts clause. This is where an organization is interacting, presumably with its customer, and trying to figure out what is it you want from us, Mr. Customer. So there's a clause in that section under 822A1 where it says that you need to include statutory and regulatory requirements among the things that you are determining during the contractual phase. So in other words, if you are going to be contracting to manufacture a product with a lot of environmental requirements or a lot of export requirements or things of that nature, it's your job as the organization to make sure that you've got your arms around those items before you commit to providing that product. Now from there, we have a very short jump over to 8.2.3. 823 is kind of the review clause, sister clause, if you will, to 822. And it basically says that once you've determined what all of those statutory and regulatory requirements are during your contract activity, you need to review those requirements. And you need to do so before you commit to supplying a product or service to the customer. So that's baked right into the standard. You need to have awareness of those items, and you need to be reviewing those items. Now, the other three clauses are now on screen. We now travel to 833. Bear in mind, anything under 8.3 pertains to design, most typically design of product. And here in 833C, there's a requirement that says an organization needs to include applicable statutory and regulatory requirements among the design inputs. Makes sense, doesn't it? If you're going to design a product, if you're going to design a new oil pump, if you're going to design a new suitcase or what have you, understand that there are almost surely going to be applicable statutory and regulatory requirements for those items, and you need to make sure that you are operating within those requirements and including those requirements in your design process. From there, we go to 8.4.2. This is, of course, commonly referred to as the purchasing clause. Under 8.4.2, it establishes a requirement that the organization needs to make sure that its external providers, suppliers, are not going to be adversely affecting compliance to statutory and regulatory requirements. So this gets into things like raw materials, perhaps product testing methods, things of this nature. You are the certified organization, and it's your responsibility to make sure that those statutory and regulatory requirements are flowed down appropriately. The last clause, then, where they are specifically mentioned is 855. Now, 855 is the post-delivery requirements clause, and it's going to have differing levels of applicability from one organization to another, but in this context, it basically states that you need to be aware of any statutory and regulatory requirements that are going to reflect on the extent of whether or not post-delivery requirements apply to you. And that's going to be very dependent on what type of product or service you offer. You know, if you offer a product where, for example, the local jurisdiction says that you need to provide recycling services for that product, that's a very direct impact on post-delivery activities. And therefore, the expectation would be that you've made appropriate arrangements for that. So that's just one example of how that might come up under 855. So again, there are six clauses in total. So in terms of how we have approached this from an auditing perspective, what we've done is we've put a couple of targeted questions in the ISO 9001:2015 audit report. Now we're going to show you exactly what those questions look like in just a couple of slides here. But what they're intended to do is to prompt our auditor essentially to have a discussion with the auditee and do a little bit of investigation and dig into some areas that, quite frankly, our auditors are going to be looking at anyhow. But to look at those areas with an eye towards statutory and regulatory requirements. So what are some of the things that might come up in an ISO 9001 audit that fall under statutory and regulatory requirements? Well, a couple of common areas that we see. First of all, anything having to do with OSHA. You know, organizations almost universally have safety training as part of their overall competency activity. Competency obviously is something that we look at carefully in an ISO 9001 audit. So therefore, if there are requirements on PPE, ergonomics, safety training, and so forth, it is entirely possible that our audit will touch on those things. Some PGR clients are ITAR regulated. This is International Traffic in Arms Regulations. This comes from the U.S. State Department, of course. This gets into things like controlled access to the facility, controlled access to your records. Our auditors can look for things like postings relating to record access, having a sign-in protocol, things of that nature. Even something as simple as safety data sheets. Some folks still refer to these as MSDS. Things that can touch on handling, use, disposal, et cetera, of chemical-based products, product cleaners, product packaging, raw materials. We see this a lot in plating operations and so forth, where there's going to be applicable statutory and regulatory requirements related to how this information is gathered and disseminated throughout the organization. Now, in terms of the layers that we're going to dig into to ascertain applicability, understand that this is almost always going to be things that we are auditing anyhow. We're looking at customer contracts and purchase orders. We're looking at product specifications. We're even reviewing your website. You know, these are things that we are looking at already in the context of the audit. It's just now we have this added layer of information that we're having our eyes open for. Think of it that way. Now, one of the things that we have emphasized to our auditors from the start on this is the expectation is that they need to ensure that the auditee has an effective process in place. Bear in mind how this is worded in ISO 17021. Auditing needs to ensure the management system ability and performance regarding the meeting of applicable statutory and regulatory requirements. Our job is to ensure that you have an effective process for identifying and implementing what applies to you. We are not going to be pulling out the actual statutes and the actual regulations and auditing them line by line. We're not OSHA auditors, we're not EPA auditors, and so forth. In the context of an ISO 9001 audit, our job is simply to make sure that there is an effective process in place for identification and deployment of these requirements. So I promised you earlier we would take a look at how this has been written into our audit report, and here we go. So as I mentioned, we have two questions. The first of these is there an effective process for identification of applicable statutory and regulatory requirements? Hopefully, in all cases, the answer is yes. The second question is a little bit more prompting. Are there any current projects or products that you observed during the audit where it was necessary for you to sample overall understanding or implementation of the applicable statutory and or regulatory requirement? Provide a summary. So in this example here, this is an organization that has both ITAR and DFARS applicable requirements, and the auditor has provided some very basic notes on what they observed during the audit. Now, obviously, it's concerning potentially that you might have a non-conformance. It is conceivable that an auditor may find a disconnect between an implemented process and an applicable statutory or regulatory requirement, but whether or not a non-conformance is issued is going to require a little bit of discretion. We want to know, does this impact customer satisfaction or the attainment of a quality objective? Does this impede your ability to manufacture your product or render your service? Now, obviously, there's going to potentially be more considerations than that, but those are some of the basic things that we've trained our auditors to consider. Now, if a non-conformance is warranted, obviously, the auditor must ensure that the requirement cited includes an appropriate clause from ISO 9001:2015. And I'll hasten to add, I don't have this written on the slide, but anytime there is a non-conformance issued in a PJR audit, the PJR client is afforded the right to issue a dispute of that non-conformance. We take disputes very seriously, and we have an entire procedure dedicated to processing disputes. We want our clients to have a value-added audit experience, and we want to make sure that we're meeting all of our applicable requirements. We do hope that you will use the points of our presentation today to develop an even better understanding of what our expectations are for statutory and regulatory requirements. I'd like to invite you to tune in for one of our other webinars. We have a very popular webinar entitled Interaction of Processes and Its Importance to a Successful Audit. This is typically shown twice a year. It is an exploration of the crucial topic of processes and how to correctly understand them. We also have non-applicable clauses, permissible exclusions, and exemptions. This is an exploration of exemptions and the right approach to take in determining which apply to you. We've got webinars on a variety of other topics as well, Stage 1 auditing, ISO 9001 itself, several other standards and other points of interest. If you check out our website, you'll see what we've got coming up. The best way for you to be kept informed of the latest news automatically is to opt in, and to do that, you'll simply visit our website at www.pjr.com, go to the bottom of the page, enter your email address in the provided space, and click subscribe. You will be opted in for news updates, information on upcoming webinars, and other points of interest. I do thank you for your time today. I hope you have found this presentation to be helpful. At this time, I will unlock the question portion of the dashboard and see if we have any questions today. As a reminder, on the presentation, if you'd like to get a copy of the slides, they will be made available for download on our website at www.pjr.com. Shortly after we're finished here. And this recording, we have recorded today's webinar. It will be posted to our YouTube page within a day or two if you'd like to rewatch the presentation with the voiceover. Any other questions today? Grant Crawford asks, if you're doing a 14001 audit with your ISO 9001 audit, will the requirement be the same? Yes, it will. Perhaps even more so, but in terms of the applicability of statutory and regulatory requirements, Grant, I'm not personally a 14001 auditor, but I can tell you that 14001 falls under the 17021 standard as well. So yes, the requirement for statutory and regulatory requirement assessment to be included absolutely falls under 14001 as well, and perhaps even to a greater extent. If you want to give us a call here at headquarters, Grant, we can put you in touch with one of our 14001 team members, and that can be discussed in some deeper detail. Joe Smith asks, what if we do not have enough business going through to provide evidence that we are meeting stat and regs? Well, Joe, in that instance, typically the expectation is going to be show that you have a process, talk through your process. You know, for a newer company, we are willing to take a certain amount of not faith, but let's just say that sometimes a process may not be long in the tooth, but you can still confirm that it has been implemented. Think of it that way. If we can confirm that there's an established process, it does not have to have an abundance of history to be accepted as effective. Think of it that way. Compliment from my friend, Mr. Ito. Glad you could join us today, Mr. Ito, and thank you for the compliment. Sheila Gagnon, apologies if I'm not saying that right. Gagnon asks, if we have not reviewed, oh, I see. Sheila, as to your question on the status of your certificate, it would be best if you reached out to your scheduler to discuss the situation directly. There's a lot of potential additional circumstances that would need to be explored. I don't want to give you a misleading answer here. Let's have you get in touch with your scheduler and we can dig into your case specifically. Okay. Michael Cox asks, can you clarify the slide where you discuss discretionary uses of the regulatory needs where it may conflict with customer requirements? Great question, Michael. And not an item that is completely unheard of. You know, if you have a customer requirement that runs counter to a regulation, you know, what kind of position does that put the auditor in? The ISO 9001 auditor's expectation, let's put it that way. If you are not abiding by a particular regulatory requirement because you have a customer requirement that is being applied that runs counter to that item. Again, we're not EPA auditors. We're not OSHA auditors. It would behoove our auditor to dig into what are the specifics of that situation, where is this disconnect coming from, is this an interpretation issue, what kind of dialogue have you had with your customer, etc. Again, understand that we are not enforcement assessors for EPA or and so forth. Okay. Does EU MDR and conflict minerals apply to ISO 9001:2015? That's a question from Brian Fouquet. Again, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Ryan, in terms of what ISO 9001 can be applied to, let's just address your question that way. ISO 9001 can be applied to any industry, any type of situation or circumstance. It's a universal standard that can be applied in any type of environment. So I hope that answers your question. Anything further from our attendees? Okay, great. Appreciate everyone's attendance today. Great questions. Hope everyone has a wonderful day. Thank you so much.